This week on the Good Stuff Weekly, I visited Broke Spoke Community Bike Shop, which I had been familiar with because I've actually used their services in the sense that they sell cheap parts, and being kind of a bicycle geek myself, I had been in and out of the shop over the past few years, but never had I spent any time really getting to know about the shop, or certainly getting to know the people, which I was able to do. So we're going to take a look inside, talk to some volunteers, talk to the founders, and find out a whole heck of a lot more about Broke Spoke Community Bike Shop, this time on the Good Stuff Weekly. I'm Leo Brown. So I dropped by Broke Spoke on one of their volunteer nights, which means this is a night that people show up to work on the bikes that they end up selling. And I ran into Gary. Gary is by day an accountant. By night, he becomes one of the volunteer mechanics who comes in and tunes up these bikes and works on these bikes. And I got to experience this exchange as we experienced, certainly for me, the first time I'd ever seen a bicycle rim of this nature, and learned a little bit about truing the rim with Gary.
Yeah, improvement. Very close.
So fewer spokes, easier to true or harder?
I go with easier. It's easier to narrow it down. That's
right. To find out which, yeah, fewer to decide which the culprit is.
That
huh?
That is true. There we go. That should do it. Oh, yeah.
Wow, look
at
that.
See how close it is over here.
Yeah. No rub.
I'm going to call that good enough.
Yeah, I think so.
The other one's not as good. I'm just getting warmed up on this one.
So what do you think, what's the age of this rim that you're working on here? Any idea?
That bike looks to me to be a relatively new bike.
Yeah.
At least is in good shape.
So right.
I would guess within 10 years.
Really? Wow.
Around here, it's kind of unusual, actually,
right,
for higher-end bikes. Pretty much did the whole inspection.
Okay.
Now I'm going to go back and start taking care of the items.
Oh,
I
see.
Because we have the purchaser right here.
Oh, wow. Okay. He's ready to buy.
Well, Will's decided this is his bike.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
I guess that's a fringe benefit of being a volunteer. You could get first pick of the litter.
That can happen.
Yeah, that's great.
That can happen.
That's awesome. It would be hard not to have a garage full of bikes working here.
Well, you know, I think that
is that kind of part
of a common difficulty that we all face.
Yeah.
You may have heard it, you know, the appropriate number of bikes for a cyclist to have at any point in time is N plus one. N being the number of bikes one currently owns.
Right. Yeah.
And
there's always another one, right?
True. Find the problem is right here. So I need to pull the wheel to the left. So I'm going to loosen the pull to the right, which has the same effect.
Hmm. So how do you know whether to loosen the pull or to tighten the pull the other direction?
You can do it. It's a balance of both.
Okay.
Since the whole way a wheel stays true is equal balance,
mm-hmm,
try and be sure that
you want to try to have the tension on both sides
offsetting equal. Correctly, yes.
Wow.
So in this case, knowing the wheel pulls to the right, my choices are loosen the pull to the right, mm-hmm, or tighten the pull to the left.
Or a little bit of both.
Yes, so I'm going to slightly loosen the pull to the right, and if that works, I'm done, and if it doesn't, I'll tighten the pull to the left.
I gotcha.
Good.
Wow.
This is just amazing. To learn a few of these little procedures from those who really know what they're doing and really get, you know, equipped. It's fun to show, to learn, have learned myself, and then to show other people.
So did you come in as a volunteer with knowledge of bikes or just a love of bikes?
Very little knowledge and definitely love. What really drew me to the Broke Spoke was their focus on the community.
Right.
And one thing in particular that drew me is when I saw the number of homeless people coming here who had nothing. There's a local homeless shelter about a quarter mile from here. And these gentlemen would come in. They don't have anything.
Right.
But so they needed and wanted transportation. But in order to get that, they would have to be able to purchase it. So what we offer them is the opportunity to volunteer to earn credit based on the number of volunteer hours they work, and they can use that to buy their bike.
Mm.
So we help them without giving them a handout.
No. It's the handout.
They work and earn it.
Yeah.
Which we've had some several guys who have come back for years afterwards as regular volunteers.
Oh,
it's just so really found it to be a place of community, a place they belong, where everyone is accepted, respected. So that's huge. So
yeah.
That definitely brought me in.
Wow.
You know, it's always good to find out the story, the history, the saga, the odyssey that is the behind the scenes of any organization. And for me to catch up with a couple of the founders, first, Brad Flowers, who was a part of this from the inception and still remains a part of this as an active board member, he was the first I talked to, and this is what he had to say about Brooke Spoke.
Brooke Spoke started in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
We started in the fall of 2010, which in retrospect seems a little crazy. There were three of us. I had an infant and my wife was pregnant.
Mm. Is that what made it crazy?
That made
particular?
That made it crazy.
Yeah.
Tim's wife was pregnant. Shane had a one-year-old. And so it was an interesting, time to start something. In retrospect, I think the challenges turned out to be a real benefit for us, because we had to trust people right off the bat, because we just physically could not run the thing fully.
Right. None of you had full attention spans at that point.
Right, and were all working full-time jobs.
Oh, wow. So you had other jobs.
Yeah.
Fresh additions.
Yeah. And we were all new at it.
And doing this. Wow.
So this was third shift, and I think we lasted for a year, 18 months, but we got really good at trying to identify folks who would potentially be able to spend time and want to spend time at the shop, and really empowering them to do so. Mainly because we didn't have a choice. So I think the volunteer culture that we've built here is sort of like, we'd love to take credit for it, but in some ways it's an accident out of necessity. We just had to trust other folks to really take on projects and run with them.
Hmm. Now, do you have employees? Do you have anybody that's actually on staff paid?
No, Brooke Spoke is all volunteer run.
Wow.
So there are kind of two tiers. The folks who run the shop, there's a committed volunteer core group, and those folks cover all the shifts. And for each shift, we kind of need three people to run a shift. We need someone to work behind the counter to make sure people can get checked in, pay for stuff they need to pay for. We have a shift manager, and then we also have a mechanic that's kind of floating between projects. And so the committed volunteers really run all of the shifts. They make most operational decisions that come up. Should we expand hours? Should we rearrange the wheels? Down to the kind of the most minute thing, up to some of the bigger decisions. And then we also have a board. There are five of us, and we kind of just help do some of the guidance, and then also provide some of the organizational support, like the accounting, fundraising, marketing, those sorts of things.
Wow. And you still have a full-time job.
And all of us still have full-time jobs.
Oh, wow.
None of us got fired.
Yeah. That's good that you managed to hold on to that while you were doing this.
It was important, it turns out.
Yeah, how about it?
Yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew you needed to hold on to that?
Right.
So, and I wasn't aware of this before we sat down and talked. I was asking about the business model,
sure.
because I was under the impression you guys took in donated bikes, fixed them up, and then gave them out. But you mm-hmm. say you sell them, but prices are negotiable. So it kind of depends yeah. on what somebody needs and what they can afford.
Right. Broke Spoke's a really cool model, I think, for a nonprofit in that our operating expenses are really covered by the operations of the shop.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone can come in, and there are several things that could potentially happen if you know, anyone could potentially need to just work on their bike. And so mm-hmm. they can swing by. You can rent stand time for a couple dollars an hour.
Oh, wow.
There's a full set of tools, a bike stand. And then also, as I mentioned, there's a floating mechanic who kind of can come around and help guide you.
Hmm.
We don't really fix bikes, but we can definitely provide guidance if you have.
So you're not a repair shop for somebody just wanting a repair.
Correct.
But you could come in, rent the space, more or less repair it yourself with the assistance of a mechanic who knows what they're doing.
Exactly.
Wow.
Which kind of gets to back to one of our core ideals is that we really want to empower people to provide their own maintenance. So we help people learn how to do it so that they can do it in the long term. So the model of the shop, you can rent stand time. You can come in, true a wheel, fix a flat. We have a bunch of used parts for sale and it's fairly inexpensive.
Yeah. I've taken advantage of that, just so you know. I bought used parts from you.
I also have.
Yeah.
And then we also have inexpensive bikes. So the bikes we're looking for are bike shop quality bikes that are used, that can be refurbished for serviceable transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to do is provide for someone who's looking for transportation in that niche, kind of below the $300 price point, which is generally where bike shops start.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
so we want to fulfill that niche. We really want to, like, if you think of competition, like who our competition would be for bike sales would be like Walmart and Target.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is we provide bikes that are serviceable in the long run, where by and large, bikes at the mass retailers aren't particularly serviceable.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you come in and you need one of these things, if you can pay for it, great. But if you can't, we're also here to support you. And in fact, that's mainly why we started, was we saw this need in the community where there was a group of folks who rode day in, who rode all the time, but it wasn't necessarily a choice. If given the choice, they'd probably rather drive,
mm-hmm.
but they rode because they had to.
Right.
And so we started the shop really to provide a service to them, and we wanted to create an environment that was open, that was a good experience for them, that kind of provided a respectful environment where they could come in, fix the bike that they had, or if they didn't have something, they could get a new bike. And if they couldn't pay for it in cash, their time was worth $8 an hour.
Right.
So people could come in, and we have a tracking system that tracks hours, and you can, if you came in just off the street, you could get something in your account would just go into a negative balance until you had the time to work it off.
Wow.
So.
And do you find that most who take advantage of that opportunity actually fulfill that commitment on the other side?
Most people fulfill it and then more. You know,
wow.
We always err on the side of trust, and it's been, you know, apart from replacing some tools every now and then, I think because we provide an environment of respect and support that most people, in turn, treat the shop with respect.
Mm. Well, that's great, because I think that some would say, well, that's a crazy business model, right?
Yeah.
They would say that. It's even a crazy nonprofit model. They may say, you're going to give these things away and nobody's ever going to come back and offer, but
yeah.
you're not discovering that. That's great.
No, and because generally people will, you know, they'll need something else, or they'll want a part, or they'll want to fix the tire, or, you know, there's something they'll come back and spend time and donate. And also it's an interesting place where people feel welcome. And then a lot of folks, you know, they feel welcome in a way that they don't really anywhere else,
mm-hmm.
in kind of, and I've said respect several times, but I think that's a really core idea, that they come back and they feel like it's a place where their time is valuable. And it's a situation to where one of our core values is, we want to learn while we're helping others.
Mm.
And so people can learn how to fix bikes. At the same time, they can be helping people, whether they're kind of fixing a bike that's going to be sold later, or it's helping someone who walks in and it happens to be something they know how to do. You know, it provides them a sense of worth because their time is valuable, and they see that kind of immediate feedback.
Have you had anybody come in and exhibit kind of a natural knack for bike repair, and they've stuck around and done more stuff even after their volunteer time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
For sure. There are lots of folks who come in and just, they're here every time the door opens. You know, they're waiting outside.
Wow.
They're the last one to leave. And they get a real sense of identity of being a Broke Spoke volunteer. As a founder, it's really humbling because, you know, when we started off, you always have that kind of nagging thought that, like, we're going to put this time in and then it's just going to be like our friends hanging out talking about bikes or, like, you know, fixing our bikes. Yeah. And so, like, I think we all had that kind of nagging thought, but it's grown so far beyond what we imagined that it's really humbling and cool to see people identify and kind of find self-worth in being here and being part of this community.
So, Brad, was it serendipity that you guys ended up getting a door that opens right up to the Legacy Trail, or how did that happen? Because, I mean, this is now probably, I mean, for those of us who bike and bike on the road, we're everywhere. But those who don't, this is where they come to bike in Lexington. They bike this trail. So how did that happen?
Sure. It wasn't serendipity.
Right.
It did take a long time, unfortunately.
Okay.
So
right.
We started off again in 2010. The first shop was behind Al's Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were friends with the owner, and he had this space. And the funny story is we had been talking about it for a long time, but Shane and Tim were over at his house. And I think they probably had a couple of drinks, and he talked them into kind of doing this thing, and they kind of loosely committed. And then it was kind of in the paper.
I love those kind of deals, right?
Yeah. And then in the paper the next morning, it was, community bike shop to start behind Al's Bar.
Oh, so it happened that quick. Wow.
Yeah.
Somebody called the paper immediately.
It was quick.
Huh? Yeah.
Maybe a little too quick. So, but we did. Anyway, so we started behind Al's Bar, and within about 2 years, we really quickly outgrew it. It was a small space. It was great for the start, but we just needed more space.
Mm-hmm.
Around the same time that West 6 was starting, the owners purchased this building, and I believe we were the first tenant to actually open.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, we signed the lease for this space with the idea that the Legacy Trail was supposed to open here in about 6 months.
Mm.
And then 6 years later,
yeah.
It's now open.
Yeah.
So it's great. We're really excited about it. But yeah, it wasn't serendipity. It took a little while, but that's the reason why, you know, for a long time, this was a little bit of a sketchy entrance, because it was just kind of like a muddy path.
Right, sure. But now it's extended on out.
But now it's, it's, the trail's great. You can ride almost all the way to Georgetown if you want.
To the horse park, right? You can ride pretty much to the horse park.
To the horse park, and then now it goes a little bit, well, it kind of goes around it, and I guess eventually it will extend into Scott County.
Oh, okay. So you can actually ride into almost Georgetown downtown. Huh, wow.
I think that's the long-term idea.
Yeah, yeah. McConnell's trace to Georgetown is what I've heard. Have you still heard that?
I'm not sure.
Extend the Lexington side out? Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't want to talk out of turn.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep all that straight.
Well, we actually have the Legacy Trail now, which is cool.
It is
so
really cool.
But what's that done for you? Has it been a benefit? Are you people finding you as a result of that?
I don't know for sure. This area has changed a lot, and we've seen a subtle change in the folks who come by. Even before, this was always a really pretty high traffic area from the Hope Center, folks going from the Hope Center through to the park here and then walking downtown or wherever. And so there was always a fair amount of traffic, and the folks who are at the Hope Center have, the whole time we've been open, been a pretty core group of folks who have really used the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But as this area has changed over time, that's kind of an open question, and that's something we talk about a lot. As the neighborhood changes, how does the shop change and evolve with it? So far, So far, really, surprisingly enough, I don't think it's changed that much.
Right.
I think there are the people who are who use the trail, who are kind of in the bicycling community, have kind of heard about us one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And
so nobody just, you don't think anybody rides by and goes, oh, what's this? There's a bike shop.
Yeah, maybe. But we have pretty limited hours. So it's not, it's the sort of place for right now, you kind of have to, you kind of come out of your, usually a destination trip, I guess. Mm-hmm. Most people don't just kind of happen on it.
Yeah.
We do occasionally get folks who are at the brewery, see the sign, walk around, and are like, oh man, this is great. I had no idea this was here. That's probably more common. People who are just at County Club or watching a bike polo match or at the brewery, swing by and see it and come back and spend some time here. And a lot of volunteers have come in that way.
Mm. That's great.
Also, the cycling club has events that they host throughout the riding months, but in the brewery and also we've worked with them there, and several volunteers have come that way.
So as I look around the shop here, how many stations do you have available for someone to be a part of this?
Yeah, we have 8 full work stations. So you can come in if you need a full set of tools. We also have a couple of temporary stands if you just want to do something quick, like change a flat tire or something.
Mm-hmm.
When it's nice, we'll have a stand set up outside. And we also have a permanent fix-it station outside.
Oh.
So anyone can walk by and use the tools at any time. Mm. We don't necessarily have to be here. There's a stand and the tools attached.
That's great. So when you're full on volunteers, there are 8 volunteers in at the stations then? Is that how it works?
No, there would still usually be 3 volunteers working, but potentially 8 people could come in to use the stands to work.
I gotcha.
So that wouldn't necessarily be a volunteer. Sometimes it is, because one way to earn volunteer credit is to come in, pick up a donated bike and start going through and start fixing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes the stands will be taken with volunteers doing that. But usually walk-in traffic will get priority. And so if someone comes in with a need, someone working on a bike would take it down and help them out if possible.
Oh, wow.
If needed.
Okay. And for that nominal fee of the stand rental or the station rental.
2 or 3, 4 bucks an hour. I should know that, but I don't.
Or it could be, what do you want to pay?
What
do
you want to pay?
Hey.
It's probably worth $10. Come on.
So where do you hope to go with this? What's the ultimate vision and where this all goes?
Well, the vision for now is we're currently working on our strategic plan. So this is actually really timely. And we're getting to this kind of the stretch point of where our volunteers are really pretty. We're starting to feel the stress of being all volunteer run.
Mm.
And so we're starting to think about what the next version of Broke's Book looks like with maybe a potential paid staff member and how that changes the dynamic. And we're a little concerned with kind of maintaining the culture of volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure we do it in a really thoughtful, appropriate way. So that's something we're thinking about. But I think the main thing is we feel like there are still lots of folks in town who have never heard about us. So there's still a lot of work we can do, towards helping more people ride more often.
Right.
I think that's our big thing, is we think the bicycle is a means for, it improves people's personal health. It improves their mental health. It gives, more equal access to economic and opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
It's more socially engaging.
Mm.
I think when someone rides a bike versus driving in a car, you're more intimate with the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of benefits to riding, and those are the sort of things that as a group of volunteers really drive us to improve the operations here, because we still think there are still a ton of people who for small reasons don't ride their bike. I guess the main reason why most people who have a bike don't ride it is because of something like a flat tire.
Mm.
So these are things very, very easily remedied.
Yeah.
And so there are still a lot of folks that we can reach, and we feel like improving on what we're currently doing right now is our main focus, making our operations a little bit more sustainable for the volunteers and really trying to be conscious about reaching out. We're always looking for more volunteers. That's the kind of the big thing is, We don't ask for money very often, but we do need volunteer time, and we also could always use more bike donations. Mm. So those are the two big things that we often ask for, is if you have a bike in the garage, please bring it by an open shift, or you can take it to the Restore on Southland Drive. We have a partnership with them.
So all the bikes come here from Restore. Oh, right. Wow, I didn't know
that. And it's nice because it's pretty convenient, and they have more regular open hours, more convenient open hours.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So what about your hours? Do you think that you might expand? I mean, is it all hinged upon volunteers?
All hinged upon volunteers. Right now we're trying to figure that out. I think it's definitely a long-term goal. We don't feel like the shop definitely isn't utilized as much as we hope for it to be utilized. Mm-hmm. So a longer-term goal is to figure out how and when more hours are the most useful to our constituents, and then how we can do it in a way that's sustainable for our volunteers. Mm-hmm. And if that's, you know, hiring some sort of manager or a part-time person potentially, we'll consider that. Open hours would be additional open hours, I think, are something that's in the near future, but we want to do it slowly and kind of respectfully with the people that have donated so much time so far.
Yeah. And right now your open hours are just 3 days a week? Is it?
Yep. Yeah. Wednesday 6 to 9 is our volunteer night. So you can come in, and it's really a good time to, if you're a first time volunteer, for volunteer orientation, there'll be someone to walk you through what the different positions are and what they entail, because we have a lot of volunteer tasks that don't require you to be a experienced bike mechanic. You know, we need someone to help folks check in, log into the system, close out the cash register, do those sort of tasks that don't have anything to do with fixing a derailleur or, you know, adjusting a headset.
Right.
So Wednesday is a good time to come in and volunteer. And also we do a fair amount of learning on Wednesdays, where we're working through kind of processing the donated bikes into bikes that can be sold. And then Thursday from 6 to 9 and Sunday from 1 to 5 is this open shop where you can just come in, rent stand time, purchase a bike, purchase parts.
Mm-hmm. So no volunteers other than those just kind of managing that on Thursdays and Sundays?
Right.
Okay.
And occasionally there will be volunteer opportunities. Mm-hmm. So if you're here on a Thursday and the stands aren't full, you can donate some time to work on a bike. Mm-hmm. But if like in the summer, the problem is, it's hard for the people running the shift if the shop's totally full with people here needing to use it, and then trying to manage volunteers also becomes kind of a conflict.
Yeah.
So in the winter time, you can pretty much always come in and volunteer some time, and there's always something to do, whether it's sort through wheels or true wheels or rebuild hubs or whatever.
There's
even like a great way to really learn how to work on bikes. We try not to throw anything away, so a lot of stuff ends up getting scrapped.
Mm-hmm.
And so bikes that for whatever reason can't be repaired, whether they've been wrecked or are irreparable for some reason, it's really good practice to strip the usable parts off of it. So you just get comfortable identifying what tools are used for what part, and you can't screw it up. It's already screwed up. So it's a great way to learn in a way that's kind of low pressure.
Yeah. So literally you don't have to have a skill set in bike repair to be a part of this.
Not at all. Yeah. No, actually most people who start off don't.
Right.
And we have volunteers who have been with us, I don't know, six or seven years probably, who've been donating their time, volunteering consistently that whole time. And you know, some of them come in with a lot of experience, but a lot of folks have no experience and over time become really capable, really great mechanics.
Yeah.
Some people don't have any interest and volunteer for years at a time and never learn, but just like being around and like the environment and want to donate to the cause. So there's really an opportunity for anyone to progress and help the organization if you're interested in promoting really a healthier lifestyle and a healthier city, ultimately, we think.
And if you have Wednesday nights open.
That helps.
Yeah. You talk about the health benefits, and you look at cultures where there are more bikes, and it's pretty obvious. I mean, you don't see the obesity, you don't see the challenges that we have. And that alone, even if you don't believe in anything else, hopefully that would be an impetus to say, let's all just be healthier. The one thing you mentioned a moment ago is one thing I hear frequently is people are concerned about safety, right? Because it's not so much that their bike doesn't work as they're afraid to ride in traffic.
Right.
And that's such an unfortunate, because we hear about those tragedies, but statistically speaking, biking is safer than being in a car. Right? When you look at that, but people don't know that. They just don't know that.
Yeah. It's, there is a strong tie to, Americans are really car centric. It's a car centric culture, and it's really hard to get beyond the idea that you don't have to own a car. You don't have to drive to the store. You could actually enjoy traveling in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, there are a lot of different trends. And I mean, it's, you know, to some people it's like, it would be, it's embarrassing not, I don't know. I think it's, there's some amount of shame, I think, associated with not being able to drive your own car somewhere, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, there's the safety issue, and, you know, there are kind of a couple of tiers of people. There are people like me who would ride pretty much no matter what. And then there are people who would ride if there are, you know, bike lanes or sidewalks. And then there are other people who would probably only ride if it was a situation like the Legacy Trail,
right,
where it's really a separate protected facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as we think about Lexington and the region, figuring out how to create facilities so that other people, you know, as we face, you know, fairly serious health problems and other social problems, figuring out ways that we can build more facilities to make bicycling more accessible to more people, I think is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there are some really simple things to start off. Just, I mean, we don't really talk about enforcement very often. You know, if you think of the speed limit downtown's 25 miles an hour. And I mean, if there was someone enforcing that, they'd be busy all day long, all the time,
mm-hmm.
but it's just not enforced.
Right.
And so people go through stoplights and go too fast. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's partly what makes it scary, is it feels out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there are a lot of ways outside of the Broke Spoke purview.
Right.
That, I think, you know, it's one thing more, I think more bikes on the road ultimately makes it safer because people just are, drivers are more aware and more thoughtful, but there's a lot of things as a culture that we need to think about. What kind of city do we want it to be? And do we want it to be a city that's safe for most of the people? You know, there's a third of the people who live in town that don't own a vehicle, you know, and do we want it to be safe for those people? And I, you know, I think we need to take the steps to do so, but
yeah, well, Lexington's gotten a lot more bike centric than it used to be. So
it certainly has.
I think that's, seeing bike lanes emerge on Southland Drive and down Lane Allen and on through that. I mean, that's
undoubtedly,
that's impressive. It's impressive to see considering where we've been, but we could always be more bike centric. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least some of us believe that.
Some of us believe that. That's a different, probably a different topic for a different day. That's a different podcast.
Yeah. The bike centric podcast. Exactly.
Right.
Well, Brad, I really appreciate you sharing.
Absolutely.
It's cool to see the shop, and I, like I say, I've been in and out of here picking up used parts, but
yeah,
to get a look around and see what you guys are doing and to hear what you have to say about it. I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it greatly.
Yeah. Thank you. Switching gears back to the volunteer night, kind of like we would on a bike with multi-gears, that is, if the derailleur was working properly. That's where I caught up to Carl, who is a longtime volunteer who's got a lot of history with bikes and a love of this community bike shop, because he was working on a bike that had a particular challenge and interesting way of fixing it. He knows his stuff, and we'll hear that as we talk to Carl in this segment.
I started just shortly after we after the place opened in our previous previous place, in the tiny little shotgun house behind Al's bar.
Yeah, I heard about that place. Yeah,
and where we had one stand, and then we expanded, doubled our to two stands.
Right,
and
doubled the size of the operation with that, huh?
And so I'd come there to deliver a check from the Sierra Club because we're helping to support them when they first got started.
Oh, wow.
And I was the treasurer, so I...
Because of the environmental impact of biking? Is that what
yeah.
Sierra was interested in?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
And some years before...
Well, it's loud.
Years before, I'd worked in a shop. I actually owned a shop with a friend back in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
But then went on to do other things. Most recently, I was a registered nurse. And then,
oh, wow.
So, but I was always looking for some... Well, actually, when I walked in the shop, it was like one of those things, just the nostalgia of the bike shop overwhelmed me.
I bet, yeah, after having run one. Yeah.
And I started to volunteer and haven't quit.
Wow.
Love
so
this place.
How do these fit in this
Excuse
hole?
Well, we heard from Brad earlier, who was one of the founders of this organization. Not only Brad, but also Tim Buckingham was a part of this as well from the very beginning. And we heard the story from Brad's perspective. Now we're going to hear the story from Tim as far as how all of this got going and kind of what it all means to the community here in Lexington.
I got involved with Brooks Spoke Community Bike Stop as a founder, but before that, I was just a commuter cyclist. Spent about 5 years working for the University of Kentucky Health and Wellness Program and met a gentleman, Shane Tedder, who was starting the Wildcat Wheels Bike Library. And that was a bike shop on campus to help students, faculty, and staff service their bicycles.
Mm.
And after helping get that off the ground with a lot of other people, some of us kept saying it'd be great to have a community bike shop.
Mm.
And we knew of the model in a lot of different cities that we had visited over time, Asheville, different places,
mm-hmm.
and knew that we wanted to open one. But the hard part was finding real estate that was affordable to rent.
Yeah.
And so in 2007, maybe, we kind of had a false start with a place, which is now where the break room is at the Manchester.
Oh, really?
On the distillery district.
I didn't hear that from Brad. So you guys had actually started down there.
Yeah. So
and that
we,
would have been before anything was in that area.
Yeah.
Right?
And
there
so
were
we
tumbleweeds blowing through and you guys trying to make something happen.
And so we didn't start there. The property was presented to us. And then at the same time, the developer started looking into TIF funding and doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quickly not available to
us.
Oh,
wow.
And so that kind of stalled us. So it took a couple more years before we ended up one fortuitous night having drinks with a friend who happened to have a space that he wanted to rent us.
So. And I heard that story from Brad earlier, and I said, that's when all good ideas start, right?
Yeah. I think, I don't smoke, but I think we had cigars. Like, I think now on being on this side of it, I kind of see like, oh, he was really baiting us. He brought out the good bourbon and cigars, and the next morning we wake up after we left this house, probably at 1 a.m., we wake up and the newspaper says
there's a press release
out. Bike shop. Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah, well, it doesn't take a scientist to... He had spoken to the media before we even sat down, and so... And that's really the genesis of Broke Spoke. So that kicked off a process of about 4 months of visioning meetings where we just threw it out at the time to date us. I don't think Facebook... It was around, but wasn't what it is today.
Sure.
So it was on message boards that we had created here in town for kind of an underground cycling community.
And right.
We tried to get as many voices in the room as possible to start to shape what a community bike shop would look like. We spent those months, I say it was like the paralysis of analysis, like just talking and talking and talking. And finally, we just threw a date on the wall and said, let's open up and just build it as we go.
Wow.
So 7 years later, we're building it as we go.
Yeah, you're still building, right?
Yeah, we're trying to figure out phase two. We're working with a strategic planner right now to really help get us out of the weeds and really more focused and move forward for the next phase.
And is that somebody who specializes in your type of community bike shop or just a strategic planner?
No, just a strategic planner, someone who works with a lot of nonprofits that helps create more healthier boards, healthier visions, missions, values, but really just to create a strategic plan because we've been in it 7 years and we know what works and doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know where the gaps are.
Right.
And so how do we address those gaps?
Mm-hmm.
And being an all volunteer run bike space volunteers is kind of the gap.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we get more people in here volunteering? How do we get people to identify with the shop? How do we train the volunteers that we have? How do we retain volunteers? Mm-hmm. All those things.
Yeah. You know, and you're sitting here looking at probably a target demo, right? Because I'm a guy who's been tinkering with bikes since I was 5 years old, you know, and I could come in here and give time, but why am I not? You know,
right.
I bought parts from you.
Well, I mean, we talked about that last night in this meeting where you think about who has time to give, like college students have time.
Mm-hmm.
So 18 to 22 year olds have time and then 45 to 90 year olds have time.
Right. Sure.
But if you're 23 to 40, you don't have time and it's because of kids or it's because you've made a couple career moves.
Mm-hmm.
And so really trying to identify those areas and find ways to get people in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I like the most about Brooksburg is you don't have to be a mechanic to be valuable. There's a lot of other things. Like, we need help fundraising. We need help doing communication.
Mm-hmm.
We need help where I'm sitting here at the front desk, just greeting people, making them feel welcomed.
Right.
And so you don't have to be a mechanic. But if you do have an interest in improving your mechanic skills, part of our strategic planning is how do we create a pipeline for folks to grow in their skills, to feel like they're growing as an individual, and then that's also giving more back to the shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that you could probably develop a pretty strong skill set, though, over time of volunteering.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the best ways to learn here is when a bike is donated, if the parts are better than the whole, volunteers work to take the bike apart, which is nice because it removes that stress. You're not concerned about breaking the bike, but at the same time, you're learning what specific bike specific tools are used on what piece.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning a little bit of how things work while you're deconstructing it to either put it in the scrap or to save the parts. And so that happens a lot on Wednesday nights during our volunteer night, is people come in and learn how to deconstruct the bikes while other people are also improving or assessing or building bikes.
Tim, I don't think I asked Brad this, but if you wanted to come in on a Wednesday, do you just show up?
Yeah,
do you
just
sign
showing up?
Really?
Yeah, okay. And so we have other volunteers that are more structured and scheduled to make sure that the shop is open.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just wanting to volunteer, come down on a Wednesday from 6 to 9. That's our volunteer night.
Right.
We're not open to the public at that time. We're only open to doing work in the shop that benefits the shop.
And so far in the time you've been open, you've never found that you had too many volunteers for things to do on a Wednesday?
Well, not so. The Wednesday is new. We just started that about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Some of the main committed volunteers realized we were backlogging on too many of the tasks that the shop needs to complete. So we were doing too many bonus nights, you know, oh, hey, we need 20 people to come down and assess bikes. And so we shut down one of our open shifts and made it a volunteer night. And there are times when maybe there's too many people, but volunteer night is nice because it's everybody focused on what's good for the shop, where it used to be any volunteers could show up during any open shift. And that's when we were trying to triage and do the things for the shop while also helping people have a safer bike to ride.
Right.
And so that became a bottleneck. And so volunteer night's been really helpful with that.
Hmm. So what would you do if you had more? Because, you know, you say that's a concern right now. So where would you put them? What would you try to do with volunteers?
The main thing is the more committed volunteers we can get, it takes the strain off the existing volunteers because they're with every shift, we have a manager and that person is responsible to make sure the door is open on time, the cash register is taken care of, all those like administrative things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also manage the way the shop flows. And then we have people that sign up to be mechanics to help other people fix their bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
So the more volunteers we can get that can stick around for a while and become a committed volunteer, that allows us to have more people to make sure the shop is open. It allows us more people to that have the training to be mechanics. And it just takes the burden off. Because right now it's not burden in a bad way, but it's definitely on the shoulders of few, where we could distribute the workload a little bit better.
Yeah. So you mentioned events and marketing and things of that nature. So Lexington does a bike night, right? Is that something that happens more times than not? Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Okay. I didn't mean to catch you off
guard. No, it's okay. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of fun bike things that happen.
Right.
And so the bike night I might have missed.
Right. But I thought that I'd seen something on Facebook about kind of a community ride.
There's a social cycling Lexington Facebook page that every now and then they throw out these community bike rides.
Okay.
They do it on a specific Friday of the month. I can't remember if it's the first or the third or the fourth. I haven't been able to attend any, but that style is really how Broke Spoke started. Was a lot of us were planning critical mass bike rides here in town. We were planning alley cat races. We were entering into the parades. We were doing anything and everything we could just to.
So what's an alley cat race? I don't know what that
is. Oh, an alley cat race is a. It's some would describe it, and I'm gonna throw up air quotes.
Yeah.
Messenger style bike race, and it's from checkpoint to checkpoint. It's a choose your own adventure. So you know what checkpoints you have to go to, but you make up the route.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a fixed route.
It's
all in the street. Yeah. It's all over the place. I mean, there was one that we did, this guy, Rich planned, where the first checkpoint was at Spindletop Hall. So he designated, he said, the first checkpoint you have to go to is Spindletop Hall. And that's like 8 miles out. This was before the Legacy Trail, and we're all on fixed gears, and it's like you're almost like 16 miles into the race, and you've only hit one stop. And that one had a 3-hour time limit. I can't remember how many miles we clocked, but very few people finished the race.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other alley cats would just be themed. It would be something fun, like a superhero, so everybody would dress up in costumes,
right,
hit these checkpoints. Maybe it's 3 miles, maybe it's 5 miles. And then end up at a bar and just party. And
that sounds fun.
It was things like that kind of created the culture that allowed Broke Spoke to then grow. And at the same time, bike polo was really taking off. So you kind of institutionalized these two areas coming out of the underground bike scene in Lexington. And so now we see a lot of folks putting energy back into that. And that's through the social cycling Facebook page, just trying to really create opportunities for folks to ride bikes for fun, but also to create community.
So are you planning, or is that part of this strategic plan? Are you going to do more of that kind of stuff to try to get people aware of what you're doing?
Yeah. We used to do a lot more events than we do now. We've really fine-tuned the events that we do through Broke Spoke. One is the Savory Cycle, which is a metric century, a 62-mile bike ride that is a fundraiser also. It starts at Holly Hill Inn and hits all of Chef Wita's restaurants in that area of the county, or the two counties, and then finishes for dinner. So you eat your way across central Kentucky.
When does that happen? I'm going to sign up now.
That comes out. That's Sunday, September 28th.
Oh,
you
can
check me on the date.
Yeah.
But that came out of, we were hosting progressive dinners, bike progressive dinners here in town, where you pay like $25 and you would start at one brewery with an appetizer and a drink, and then you go to another brewery and have dinner and a drink, and then you'd go somewhere else and have dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And Broke Spoke would make a little bit of money off of that.
Yeah.
So we have a history of doing a lot of events. And so part of the strategic planning is, how do we continue to do more events, but also that's more outreach focused in terms of, we really need volunteers. Mm-hmm. These are the things we need.
Yeah. I've been a part of a running club that did a West 6 night.
Mm-hmm.
So is that something you're talking about maybe doing with a community bike ride as well, to come in and be part of the brewery?
Yeah. So on Tuesday is running club night at West 6.
Yeah.
And then the cycling club, the Bluegrass Cycling Club, BCC, they've partnered with West 6. And during the summer, I think it's every other Saturday, they have an event called Pedaling for a Purpose.
Okay.
And they do an education class before, and then they have group rides leave from the brewery that go various distances. Maybe it's 15, 25, and 50 miles. I don't know.
Depending on the biker.
Depending on the person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you self-select what route you want to go. And then there's group rides. And what happens is, any miles that are logged from the brewery on those rides on those specific Saturdays, the cycling club donates 10 cents per mile, and West 6 donates 10 cents per mile.
Hmm.
And then that money goes to a couple different nonprofits. The two this year were Transy Bikes, which is located on the University of Transy's campus, to help students have access to transportation, and then to Broke Spoke. And so actually on this upcoming Saturday, the 13th, we'll be receiving a check for $1,300 from the cycling club for that event.
Yeah.
So that's one of the group like cycling rides that leaves from here. For this year coming up, Broke Spoke specific, we have some ideas. Maybe we'll bike to the Legends one night, the baseball team. Maybe we'll do some more progressive dinners. We don't know.
That's cool. So, but ultimately, expanded hours, expanded operations. I mean, you really kind of want to see this being something bigger than it is.
Well, we want to grow our volunteer base and really do what we do and do it well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that translates to expanded hours just yet. Mm-hmm. We've kept roughly the same hours for 7 years.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why we've done that is because with volunteers, somebody could say, I want to do a Monday night shift. And let's say we open up Monday night and then that person has to leave 3 months later.
Right.
Now we're kind of saddled with this shift that we mm-hmm. now have to figure out. So we standardize the hours instead of standardizing it to the volunteers. Mm-hmm. And so right now we're open Wednesdays and Thursdays 6 to 9 and Sundays 1 to 5. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to be open more, but we kind of don't want to put that before mm-hmm. increasing volunteers.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
And you don't think the limited hours has necessarily been a hindrance for you?
Well, I think we could definitely get, we could definitely, if we did increase the hours, we'd be able to service more bikes and get more people the help that they need. But we're also pretty packed in here, mm-hmm. When we are open. So right. we're not turning people away when we're open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a yes and no. It's like, yeah, we'd be able to help more people, but with the capacity we have now, it'd really crush us mm-hmm. if we tried to open more.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just me trying to be safe and saying, let's get more volunteers before we open up more.
Yeah.
And that's just been an active conversation the last couple of months through this strategic planning.
Right.
So
how many, I guess, do you have a goal on the numbers? How many do you need per week, per shift? I mean, what are you trying to do exactly?
We're trying to increase our committed volunteers. And those are folks that have volunteered for at least 3 months mm-hmm. and who are vetted by our steering committee.
Right.
And then they become shop managers. They have keys to the space, mm-hmm. things like that. We'd like to increase that by between 8 and 10 people this year okay. by the end of the year. So that would be a pretty significant increase. Mm. We don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. But that sounds doable.
Yeah. It's
8
doable.
Or 10 people.
We were talking last night, like how many people volunteer? Let's say you get 50 people to volunteer. Well, how many of them volunteer regularly? Maybe 15 of the 50 volunteer mm-hmm. regularly.
Right.
Of the 15, who actually want to become more standard, like become more involved in the shop? Who mm-hmm. wants to be responsible to open up the shop? Who wants to take on this level of responsibility? And we're talking like between 1 and 2 out of 50 yeah. people to volunteer. So right. we kind of have to shake the tree pretty hard, but mm-hmm. We just want to really increase the volunteerism. And you find that there's a lot of people that volunteer because they love to volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had some people, most of our main volunteers have been here since almost day one.
Wow.
If not day one, it was within the first 12 months of opening.
Mm.
And they've been around for 7 years now.
Oh. So, and you're doing that now through what, social media, through just the events, through the, I mean, what's been the biggest, is there a single source that seems to be bigger than others? Or
to
no?
get volunteers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, really it's been people coming into the shop and okay. realizing how amazing it is,
mm-hmm.
and then wanting to give back either to earn a bicycle for
right.
our sweat equity program, or just realizing how great of a space it is.
Mm-hmm.
How at home they feel, and then they just come back time after time.
Yeah.
So we want to find a way to operationalize, like increasing volunteers mm-hmm. without it feeling like these pipelines,
mm-hmm.
Like we, right. we still want it to be organic in
right.
nature.
Right.
That's the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And that, I think that's got there's kind of a tricky balance to that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, we're going through this strategic planning process where we're trying to quantify our metrics, like how mm-hmm. many, like you asked, how many volunteers mm-hmm. do we
yeah.
need for next
yeah.
year? And it's like, well, as many as we can get. And the woman that's helping us with this is like, no, you need to set a measurable outcome or a measurable goal so you can measure your outcomes mm-hmm. at the end of the year. And
yeah.
it's like, ah, oh, she's really putting the screws to us, wants us to say 8 people or so. Some things we've been able to give direct answers to, and others it'll say, like, by the end of the year, we hope to accomplish this,
mm-hmm.
like more vague.
Yeah.
But really just trying to increase the overall volunteer pool.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like I say, I think it's a tough balance to try to find that, how are we growing effectively and how are we serving effectively? And the good thing is that I think for you, unlike a lot of nonprofits, your board was kind of organic, right? I mean, you kind of grew from...
Yeah, it's all kind of happened organically.
The visionaries. I mean, and when you got that kind of going, you don't necessarily have a board of directors breathing down your neck, mm-hmm. looking at the spreadsheets, wondering where your dollars are.
Yeah, and so we're set up in a way that there's a group of volunteers that are called the steering committee, and they actually decide all policy for the shop.
Mm.
So the day-to-day operations are handled by the steering committee. And then the board was put in place really just to meet the legal obligations of having a board.
Right.
And to make sure we were legal in terms of our insurance, our paperwork, all that stuff, to do fundraising and to do communications.
Right.
And the reason why that was our focus initially is because the three of us that agreed to be on the board because nobody else wanted to do it, those were our strong suits. And so Shane and Brad and I said, we'll handle these things if other people can handle that.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're at a point where it's like trying to re-envision the board. What is the focus of the board? And so that's what the strategic planning has been good about, is like, you know, if we can help recruit and retain volunteers, that helps the steering committee run the shop, that helps the shop run better. But then also we're trying to find ways to, I kind of use the term like what fills your soul. Hmm. Like there's people want to volunteer for a reason, and that gives them the warm and fuzzies. Mm-hmm. So when you come down here, what gives you the warm and fuzzies, and what makes you cringe about having to volunteer that night? And so if there's a way to alleviate the stuff that most people don't want to do and find other outlets for that, then that allows people to, for their soul to get filled, and then they're more likely to continue to volunteer. And so with a lower volunteer base, you know, people are shouldering a lot of stuff that they don't enjoy.
There's some cringing going on.
There's some cringing. It's not a mean cringe.
Right.
It's a, we all know this has to be done for the shop to continue to be open.
Even though we'd rather do that other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're trying to find ways to like free that space up for people. And we don't know what that's going to look like, but we're working on it.
Oh. Well, Tim, it's cool hearing what you're talking about, you know, and really seeing what you guys are doing down here. And it's a neat concept. I've learned a lot in these conversations, and I really appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I hope you get to come down, talk to some volunteers, talk to some folks that have benefited from the shop.
Yeah, and maybe volunteer myself, right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
We'd appreciate it.
That's awesome. Thank you, Tim.
Thank
you. Appreciate it. One of my highlights was talking to Linda, who was on the volunteer night and pretty new to this, and interesting to hear her perspective as a brand new volunteer, especially after talking to those who are very seasoned and experienced. Here's Linda with her reflection on being a part of Brooks Boat Community Bike Shop.
You know nothing about bikes?
No, nope. No, when we started out, we didn't know anything about bikes at all.
Okay. Now, how long have you been doing this?
Oh, I've been doing this, how long, Isaac? About 6 months, maybe?
6 months?
6 months,
so now you know a thing or two, I would assume.
Well, initially when I came, I just started sorting stuff, you know, by size and everything, Zen activity.
Size and shape.
Size and shape and all that, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then Al and I don't know who else, they devised a system where they had a piece of paper to walk you through how to take a bike apart. And obviously Al and Carl, they're always here to tell us or, you know, show us something if we don't know. But once we had that sheet of paper, we began to take bikes apart. Initially Isaac and I would take a bike one evening, we'd take it apart, next evening take another bike, third evening take another bike, and then we started each taking a bike and take it apart. And today is the first time that Al said, let's repair something.
Oh, wow.
So he's walking us completely through.
This is a big step.
It's a big step. Yeah.
That's cool.
So we're learning from the ground up.
So what got you in here to begin with? What was it that made you decide?
Well, I ride my bike.
Right.
And I'm a colleague of John Kluse.
Okay.
And
who's another volunteer.
Who's another volunteer here. And he had organized one time for SARE students. I teach at SARE school. For SARE students to come and check out the whole bread box environment here. And we went to Brooks Boat.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked the environment. I thought this was kind of a cool opportunity to volunteer, learn something about bikes. It's both self-serving and, you know, do something for the community.
So. Yeah, yeah.
More self-serving, actually.
Well, that's great. Right, I mean, you're doing it, even if it, you know, regardless of why.
It's fun doing it. It's fun doing it.
And it's got to be great for you two to bond, right? Mother son bonding in here. That's got to be terrific.
Personally, I think that's been really good. I don't know what he thinks about that.
Yeah, sons usually have a different perspective, right? I mean, come on, I got two of them. I know what it's all about. But
that's been really good.
Yeah. So do you you think that you'll eventually kind of have the confidence to be, I mean, obviously you'll be unsupervised eventually, right? That's a goal here?
My goal is to learn how to maintain my own bike.
Okay.
And the volunteers are now, many of us are participating in a workshop. We're meeting every Monday for about 6 weeks.
Okay.
For several hours, and we're learning how to maintain our bikes.
Oh, wow.
So that's also something that we have access to as volunteers here.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're learning through doing here, and then we're learning through this other workshop. So
right.
That's really great.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Hmm. So if you come here and you start working here 2 months from now, you know, maybe I'll teach you something.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know if there's a lot of hope for me, quite frankly. I appreciate your confidence, but...
Actually, it's confidence in me. Maybe I'll just show you something
that's,
I can do.
Oh, that's great.
So great to see inside this operation, Brooks Spoke Community Bike Shop. Lots of great volunteer opportunities, ways for you to get plugged in, be a part of this, find out more, follow them on Facebook, of course, social media everywhere. Head to their website, find out more, but get plugged in, especially if you're a bike enthusiast, if you're a community enthusiast, if you want to see Lexington be a better place. That's why they're here. They're doing all of that. Again, a big thanks to Brooks Spoke for letting me come in and get in their way and bug them as they're working on stuff. All of that, really a great education, and I wish these guys all the best. That's it for this week. The Good Stuff Weekly. I'm Leo Brown.